Eric Macromella, TSN legal analyst, joins us. Macromella, what's happening?
Let me prepare the legal papers. I will seize the car, and if it's a nice car, I will keep the car that I have seized.
Nice.
Does that sound fair, guys?
Hey, sure. Why not?
Why? What are you going to do? Stop me?
Well, I won't. No, I would never. I would never. I would never try to fight a lawyer on legal stuff. On other things, anytime, but on legal stuff, probably not. What can you tell us about Northwestern and becoming a union? What does this mean?
Well, it's a pretty historic decision. Peter Orr, the guy that made this ruling, works at this Labor Relations Board in the U.S., a government organization. He basically said, look, I looked at everything. And as far as I'm concerned, the players are employees. They're not athletes. They're employees first. They're not primarily students, as he called it. They're employees. And because they're employees, they have a right to form a union and to bargain with the university, namely Northwestern. And, you know, he looked at a few things, but he focused on this issue of control. When employers exercise a lot of control, you can say there that they're beginning to create this employee relationship. And the big thing was hours, guys, hours. You know, the NCAA caps it at 20 hours of athletics a week. Players at Northwestern, including the guy that headed this up, Kane Coulter, the quarterback, says he's working about 50 hours a week on athletics. And, you know, anything above 20 hours was characterized as, you know, voluntary workouts. So players knew if they didn't show up that they would, you know, there would be consequences and they may not play. So they're saying that, you know what, you have this massive control when it comes to the number of hours players have to dedicate to football. Apart from that, players are steered away from courses. If you want to get a job off campus, you have to get permission. You can't live off campus if you're a freshman or a sophomore. There are social media restrictions. If your coach tries to friend you on Facebook, you have to friend him back. If you buy a car, you have to let your coach know what kind of car you bought. There are drug policies, alcohol policies, on and on and on. You have to wear suits to games. So there are so many measures designed to control these athletes that on top of the fact that you provide them a certain level of compensation, and on top of that you can fire them and hire them, those are all the hallmarks, guys, of employment. Those are the three hallmarks. Control over employees, check. The ability to fire or hire them, check. And providing them with compensation, check. So even though you're not calling it an employment relationship, according to this guy, Peter Orr, he's just saying, look, you know, it looks like it. So I'm going to say it's just that.
Okay, wait a second. The players have to accept a friend request from a coach on Facebook? Why do they, like, what happens if they don't? What's the ramifications?
You see, that's a good way to keep track of what an athlete's doing. So that's why you're going to friend them. I teach the sports law course, and then I've got a student that went to a Div 1 school, and she had posted a picture of herself on Facebook when she was there attending, and it was her holding a red plastic cup. You know those cups you put the booze in, right? But you don't know what was in the cup because it's red. She was immediately contacted by the coach and told to remove the picture because it reflected poorly on the university. So certain assumptions are being made there that may or may not be accurate. But you have to understand that when you sign up for the NCAA, you are essentially signing away your life. You are told what to eat, what to do, when to wake up, when to go to sleep, how to walk, how to run, how to do everything. And it's a bit like sort of the army or a military style type of setup. So, yeah, there is a ton of control, guys.
I had no idea it extended that far. It sounds kind of silly, actually, to get into the Facebook thing. But if that's what it is, that's what it is. My question is this. How long will we be in the appeal process? Because Northwestern has said it will appeal, because if they don't, like people are saying, this is a huge sort of landmark situation that affects every school.
No, it's massive. I mean, this is historic. Look, first, the landscape is littered with NCAA lawsuits. It's not the first one. I mean, this technically wasn't a lawsuit. It was this administrative proceeding because the players wanted to be characterized or deemed as employees so they could form a union. But there was a lawsuit filed last week, the week before that. But this one is the first declaration from an official body saying, yeah, you guys are employees. You guys can start to sort of bargain as a unit. So, yes, Northwestern has no choice but to appeal. The appeal is already underway. What happens next is the union, or it's not yet a union yet, but Kane Coulter holds a vote. If he has enough support, the union is created. So let's assume the union is created. At the same time, Northwestern is appealing. It goes to the next level in this administrative proceeding. And if the Northwestern fails there, what they'll do is refuse to acknowledge the athletes as a bargaining unit, as a union, mm-hmm. and then take this to court. So that means we're not months away. we're years away from a resolution.
You know, forming a union and having it go anywhere long term, Eric, are two different things. And you outlined all of the categories that makes them seem like they're more of an employee than a student athlete. Does this, even being able to form a union, do you think it's a significant step towards college players potentially getting paid in the future?
I think it's a massive step towards something. Sounds like Seinfeld, I know. It's a massive step towards enhanced compensation. Getting paid, I don't know. I think what we're going to see is this is a massive step towards players getting a more generous or getting a stipend. There's already been a stipend of $2,000 that's been proposed by the NCAA because they have no choice. They're being sued left and right. But if these players get $4,000, $5,000, or $6,000 on top of their scholarship, remember, scholarship doesn't pay for everything. The notion of a full ride is not an accurate one. Mm-hmm. It does pay for tuition, room and board, book fees, those things. But there are other incidental fees that are not captured by it. So if you give the players a few $1,000s, then that may be enough. And let's not forget this. This is important for the players to remember. And here's my legal advice to them. Your scholarship isn't taxable. That's fine. It's a taxable benefit. But if you start getting paid a stipend, that will be taxable. So you have to pay taxes on that. I don't see a situation where we'll have salaries. It's just too complicated, I think. I don't know how you work that, how you determine how much you pay someone. How do you make athletes free agents? It's inherently complex. It's possible, but I don't see this decision by itself being responsible for having players paid in the future, but I see this decision in part responsible for enhanced compensation.
Yeah, and the thing is, Eric, correct me if I'm wrong, at the very least, aside from the broad brush ramifications for every school, it seems that the small gains could be, as you've mentioned, more control over what the compensation is, but more control over working conditions. Go through any negotiation between management and a union, all the things that go on the table. I would assume many of these things could be applied to Northwestern if it goes to the end, and they can say, look, if you want me to work 50 hours, here's what has to happen. Okay, let's cut it back to 40. Now, how about 30? On and on and on. Is that a natural progression in this as well?
Absolutely. You're smack on. The players can end up with things like disability insurance, workers' comp claims, pensions. When you're a bargaining unit, you ask for things that are in the best interest of your membership. We've seen it with the NHLPA, the MLBPA, which transformed the labor landscape in the 60s by way of Marvin Miller creating the baseball union, which is the strongest union arguably on the planet. You are going to see absolutely requests made like any other employer-employee relationship, bearing in mind you are dealing with students that are there for a finite amount of time.
Eric Macarella, legal analyst for TSN, joins us. Eric, I know you've been following this for a long, long time, and as you mentioned, there's tons of lawsuits against NCAA. How much does precedent take a hold in this, and the fact that kids have been student athletes for years and years and years and have never been compensated, how much will that trump almost any lawsuit? How does it suddenly change?
The reason they haven't been paid is because it really hasn't adequately been challenged in a court of law. And we haven't seen these lawsuits go all the way through. There is a lawsuit, a class action suit against the NCAA going to trial this summer. It's the O'Bannon class action lawsuit. There they're saying, you've been using my face forever. I want you to pay me for it. So the reason we haven't seen players get paid is because it hasn't been challenged. But now, guys, there are a ton of lawsuits out there against the NCAA. So the bottom line is this. These lawsuits, what happened yesterday, but all the other lawsuits, are going to force the hand of the NCAA. It is going to force change. You are going to see change. The NCAA that you know now is going to look different than it will in 10 years. I don't think you'll have players that will be paid outright salaries, but you're going to see levels of compensation that may well be proportionate to that team's contribution to the NCAA and their billion-dollar revenue model. Like when you look at the numbers, guys, it's nuts. I mean, you're looking at the TV deal for NCAA football. It's about $7 billion over 10 years. March Madness alone is a 14-year deal valued at $10.8 billion. There's a lot of money to be had here, guys.
One thing that jumps to mind for me, Eric, and and your opinion on this, obviously. And out there, outside of sports, if an employer cannot or chooses not to pay, they can close the doors and say, we're done. How could that affect this situation as a specter hanging out there? They're making tons of money. They could pay certainly something. But what about schools that say, nah, we won't?
That's a great point. If let's say you take this to its extreme, where players are being paid, some universities won't be able to compete, and they'll simply stop offering those sports as part of the program. The revenue is generated by way of basketball and football, and that's it. Trampoline and ping pong don't generate anything. And if some universities feel like, look, those two sports are costing us money, we're operating at a loss, then they'll stop offering it. So that's why anyone who says they know how this is going to end and how it's going to unfold is being really ambitious and enthusiastic. This can go in any number of directions, very much like an asteroid hitting the Earth's atmosphere, right? Breaks up and flies all over the place. And that's kind of where I think this is going.
Eric, it's going to be fun to watch this story unfold. I'm sure as a legal analyst, you're loving it. As always, we appreciate the insight.
No problem, guys. I think my show is on tonight on TSN 1260. I'll be talking a bit more about this and some other stuff as well, including Roddy White and whether he had an enforceable deal with Dylan Hoyt, the fan on Twitter.
Oh, right, yeah, man, he has been getting ripped apart for that one. Eh? Yeah, don't make a bet in public forum if you're not going to man up and own it. Right? That's what I would. Are you going to are you going to be any picture? Are you going to be live tweeting pictures of yourself during your show too?
No, should I do a selfie or something?
Oh, well, yeah. Just lately I've noticed, you know, we're seeing a lot of you on CTV pictures. I just thought maybe we'd see some more of those.
I've been appearing there for a while, but I just started putting a picture there so everyone can see how much weight I've gained.
Oh, well, I was like, Eric Estrada? Wow, who knew? Who knew?
Michael Thomas.
Punch!
Miami Vice. Come on, guys.
Nice. Well, hey, I like the fact that we've really upped the olive content because we're going from Matt Carmella to Cogliano's coming up after 4 o'clock, so it's awesome.
By the way, Matt Carmella is Egyptian. It's not Italian.
But I know. Well, that's close.
There is a brown content. You're right.
Yeah, sure. Oh, well, olive.
Exactly, olive.
Okay, Eric, we'll talk again soon.
All right, guys. Take care.